Foundation. Which is a South African signatory to the International Refugee Convention without making any reservations, etc. And we can say that in terms of these international instruments, no one is prevented from making an application. The only thing the department is doing is to make provision regarding qualification. So how do you qualify? When do you qualify, etc.? Take certain things into consideration when you need to make these decisions. Anyone with no asylum transit visa, now asylum transit visa is issued in terms of Section 23 of the Immigration Act. So if a person presents himself or herself at a port of entry, the person says, I want to apply for asylum, that person will be issued with a Section 23-1 permit and order to process the nearest refugee reception office. So what we're saying is that anybody that has that asylum that is taken through a process to verify the means of the entry and the reasons therefore, and such is taken into account when you consider the application. So if a person comes into the country without an issue documentation, because you have to actually have your Section 23 permit, there will be investigation how you entered the country, etc., because that might have an impact later on dealing with them. So people from the neighboring countries will be dealt with differently as it comes to this requirement, because you would also have, if you look at the study visa that you're busy looking at, etc., there might be differences in this regard. Chair, on page 24, it's just the issue about administrative fair administrative justice, where it's indicated there that any decision to deny asylum must be based on fair administrative justice, observing the principles of innocence. Obviously, this is done, even currently as we speak. Baja, the promotion of the Administrative Justice Act is a constitutionally mandated piece of legislation. If you do not comply with that, you would be found wanting. And there are internal remedies and processes, procedures that have been set out in the legislation in terms of Baja, where they say you first have to exhaust your internal remedies before applying Baja. And that has been based upon the legislation. Chair, at this point in time, can move to page 26. It's just to indicate in with regard to the issue about the present itself within the 5 days from the arrival in South Africa. What should be clear in this regard, if you look at Section 23 of the Immigration Act, it gives you 5 days. So you need to align legislation. So the issue of the 5 days, apart from us saying that it is enough time, a person should present himself or herself as quickly as possible, it's also to bring it in line with what is stated in Section 23.1 of the Immigration Act. You can't have pieces of legislation that contradict each other in this regard. So I just wanted to mention that. Chair, if we go to page 28, and just at that first column there, where it was indicated, and I've discussed this now, to retain the 14 days in the original Act, I've already spoken to Section 23 of the Immigration Act, which allows a person 5 days to travel to the nearest refugee reception office. There's mention made of the Bullard judgment, the Asimo judgment, etc., and there must be compelling reasons for complying with a 5-day requirement, and that includes hospitalization, institutionalization, etc. We're aware of the cited judgments, we've looked at them, and and we're proposing measures to ensure that there are no people prevented from seeking asylum. And if you look at the legislation, there are clear processes and procedures set up. If a person arrives with a Section 23 permit at a refugee reception office, they are present. Even if you do not have a Section 23 permit in terms of the Immigration Act, there are also processes and procedures. So nobody is being turned away on the fact that they came into the country by means that we're not aware of, etc. There's just processes and procedures in place that we need to verify. So there are also several administrative measures taken to ensure that the refugee reception offices operate more effectively and efficiently. I've already alluded to that. So there is a 2-2 refugee reception center that's now been established. And we're trying to get our systems and everything, obviously, electronically so that you minimize issues of corruption, etc. Chair, if we go to page 31, where it's indicated that the UNHCR has stated that the exclusion clauses in the 1951 refugees are exhaustive. Our view, we don't necessarily agree with this specific comment, and the reason is that you must apply this to the specific context. We're not of the view that it is exhaustive in nature, and then South Africa has its own certain thresholds, etc., and own unique circumstances that you need to apply for this. So what we're doing is we're elaborating on this, etc., because there are certain things that you need to bring in line with and you need to comply with in terms of the South African legislation. And as I've indicated earlier, you have to comply with legislation that is in South Africa. So we're just aligning it with those pieces of legislation that any South African citizen in any event has to comply with. Chair, if we move to all the others, we're going to page 33. LLHC and LHR were indicating that the phrase in any way is that it's too vague and it's subject to a wide range of interpretations, thereby giving rise to problems and possible complications. What we're saying in the reference to in any way, the department was to point out that every case will be dealt with on its own merit. That's the reason we're doing it. I think later on we also indicated in any way will be substituted with something else, but we'll get to that later on. But that's basically the intention, that we're saying that the department, that we, every case will be dealt with on its own merits. Chair, if we can move to page 35, on 5.1F and G, where the issue is raised regarding the person, the principle of innocence until proven guilty. Obviously, the problem is that the rules of natural justice and the principles of natural justice will apply in this regard. And there are clear processes and procedures in place, like the interviews that need to be held, etc., to make sure that before you grant a person refugee status, certain steps have been complied with, etc. Also, that the necessary information, all of it has been taken into consideration, that you've complied with the Promotion and Administrative Justice Act, etc. So, obviously, the rules of natural justice, the principles of natural justice will apply. On the issue of 51E, F, and G, regarding special provisions of the Child Justice Act, etc., we've already alluded to this, where existing laws relating to children who commit crime obviously will apply. You've got the Children's Act, you've got the Criminal Procedure Act, etc. Those pieces of legislation will be applicable in these specific instances, and that is why we say that when a situation arises where one would have to apply the other pieces of legislation, those specific individuals will be referred to the relevant or the competent authorities in this regard that administer those pieces of legislation for assistance and finalisation. And obviously we're also saying that asylum seekers and refugees, they're bound by all the laws that are on the Republic of South Africa. You can't have citizens having to comply with legislation but not other people. So that is very important. On the issue of 5.1, where certain questions were raised with regard to 5A, D, and E, like what were the criteria leading to a certain when, if a person has re-availed or re-established himself or herself. What we're saying is that when there's re-availment, SCRA, as the overarching, will look at this specific aspect. So it's not that it's the only that looks at this. SCRA will make a determination based on information, country reports, etc., and also the fact that whether or not the person has and what the instances are taking into consideration or international instruments, etc., SCRA will make that determination on a case-by-case basis. Chair, we can move to page 38. I've already dealt with it. It deals with the issue of re-availment again, etc. We've dealt with that with section 5.1H and E. We said that those are distinct and they should be kept separate, shouldn't conflate the two. We also indicate that we disagree with the argument that voluntary re-availment should be understood as return to the country of nationality or former habitual residence with a view to permanently reside there. As I said, SCRA will look at this, because if are instances where people return to the country and once you leave it, you divide yourself from the protection of South Africa, and if we're not aware of that, for instance, it's a problem. Then it would mean that you are re-availing yourself at that point in time. What we suggest in this regard is that the word resolves be substituted with the words may issue an order in clause 3, which deals with section 5.1H. Chair, if we move to page, all the others that I mentioned, we've dealt with to page 43, which deals now with the refugee reception officers and refugee status determination officers, which are obviously OAS. Which relates to the proposed amendment of section 8.1 that suggests an intention to introduce greater control by the department over policy matters, etc. And we're saying that the establishment or disestablishment of refugee reception officers is determined by many factors, including resources that need to be taken into account. It's a decision of a polycentric nature whether you have refugee reception office situations in certain areas, etc. And you have to look at your resources. That's the reality on the ground. If we look at page 44, well, it's just reference to section 8.1 again, where it's indicated that it should be deleted. Our view is obviously it shouldn't be deleted because there are many factors that need to be taken into consideration in dealing with it. Chair, if we can move to page 46, which deals with an 8b2, the point on the ROV member should include considering the ability to deliver services in time, etc., and delays increase the chance of corruption and fraud. And obviously we have the view that the current requirements for appointment are sufficient. Remember that the minister does the appointment at the end of the day, obviously taking into consideration, and it's the minister's discretion then to mention. Obviously with if you look at legal qualifications, etc., I think there are questions about that as well. What does the legal qualification mean? Does it mean you practiced? Does it mean you haven't practiced? Does it mean you admitted? Does it mean you're not admitted, or do you just have a legal degree, etc.? Those decisions, obviously, is the minister's prerogative, and he makes decisions in this regard for appointment of the people. What we are then saying is that the current requirements for that they're sufficient, and the provisions have been enhanced to require that all the members of the RAB are legally qualified. If we go to page 47, Chair, with regard to the composition of the RAA, the issue to address the large backlogs, to present an appeal processes, etc., we've already discussed that, and what we're trying to do in the bill is to have proposed amendments that would have the Refugee Appeals Authority members dealing with cases on an individual basis. It's one of the areas that's critical for us because, and obviously the chairperson will decide in which cases you will be able to sit on an individual basis. There will obviously be huge improvements relating to the finalisation of backlogs in this regard, because currently if we have it, they have to sit as a quorum. If you don't have a quorum, you can't sit, so you can't hear any of these applications or appeals. Obviously we don't agree with the suggestion to have the appeals dealt with by three members composing the refugee appeals, because then we're going back to the situation that we're currently sitting with, which is creating a backlog and increasing the backlog, and that needs to be dealt with. As I indicated, the chairperson would have a discretion to decide as to which appeal may be decided upon individually or by more than one of the members. Chair, if we look at on page 48, we sent the DHN government should be congratulated for this very positive step forward and to make it abundantly clear that a single member of the RA may consider appeals. So there is clearly support for this as well, but we note that comment. And obviously, what we want to indicate is that there's a similar provision should be made for the SCRA, because in terms of your Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs, they also have to sit as a quorum. So the suggestion here is that clause 24A should be amended to insert a new subsection 2, similar to that of section 82C, which would then obviously allow your members of your Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs to also sit as individual members giving reviews or dealing with reviews in order to ensure that backdrops and etc. are not there. Alternatively, we indicate that if the proposal to amend section 92 is obviously acceptable, it may as well address the issue raised here, where we indicated that backdrops are created that will solve that specific issue. So that's the suggestion that comes in, the alignment between the RAD and the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs when it comes to sitting and dealing with reviews and appeals, chairperson. On page 49, when we look at where it's indicated consideration should also be given to gender equity when appointments are being made, we've taken this into, and obviously this is on the agenda, and when the minister makes appointments in this regard, that is definitely taken into consideration when appointments are made. With regard to the network, the bill proposes periods which are far too long for officials to sit in these positions and then to reappoint for an unlimited number of periods. Obviously, it's this where we indicate that it's for 5 years, 3 years, 5 years, etc. What the bill is stating is that it limits it at no more than 5 years. It's not an appointment for 5 years. It limits it to 5 years. So what you would then get is in situations where you see that there's an increase in the volume, you would have the ability to appoint someone to act for a period of a year, act for a period of 6 months, in order to deal with the back, so that you don't sit with these problems of backlogs, etc. So it's creating a mechanism in terms of the legislation in order to deal with certain administrative issues. might become a problem if you look at the volume of work, etc. Summary dismissal and disciplinary measures. This is when we look at, you know, when you want to appoint people, they have to undergo certain, you know, we send the government has made a firm commitment to prevent corruption, and therefore the provision, in our view, is seen as sufficient. It's important to point out that anyone can potentially be corrupt. It's just true. But if we have these other processes, that's the polygraph testing that we're talking about for people to be appointed, is to ensure that we minimize corruption and make sure that we've got correct people, non-corrupt people in the RAB, SCRAF, etc., and in our offices. The next section is in section 8G. The LRC has indicated that on the current reading, no provision is made for the filling of such vacancies, and it creates a gap. We disagree with this. If you go and read section 8, it provides for the filling of vacancies. It is that you can fill vacancies. So once vacancies occur, the minister can fill those vacancies. If we go to clause 13, which deals with insertion of sections 9A to 9H, the issue about the Refugee Appeals Authority members must be legally qualified, I think it's vague and ambiguous, and it cannot stand. I've mentioned this earlier, that a legally qualified may include academics, and not only practitioners. As I mentioned earlier, the question was, must this person be practicing, etc.? That's not the issue. Does a person have a legal qualification in this regard? SCRA and RAB, they operate in a decentralized manner. Obviously, we have different set over the country, and what you want to have with your refugee reception offices going forward is that you would have SCRA and the RAB also sitting in those specific offices where there is a refugee reception office in order to deal with applications. In other words, reviews and appeals as they come with people apply at that relevant refugee reception office. Chair, if we move to page 52, on clause 9C, which will be the functions of SCRA. The issue about the limitation on the right to work for asylum seekers and refugees is indicated as deeply problematic and is completely unfeasible to assess, and the sustainability determination must be removed. Now, what we're saying, in exercising the SCRA power to determine work and study conditions, SCRA must obviously take into account a lot of the circumstances of the applicant, and that will be done on a case-by-case basis, or by formulating certain guidelines to be applied by your refugee reception officers in the refugee reception offices when they go about issuing the Section 22 permits in particular cases. The refugee reception officer acts within closely and clearly defined guidelines, obviously, and SCRA retains, obviously, the power to oversee this. And so there's oversight by SCRA, one of the improvements that we made in the legislation, to make sure that there is enhancement as far as the quality of decision-making is concerned in this regard. We're aware of the Wachinuka judgment, and what the Wachinuka judgment indicated in this regard is that the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs, that was the decision, they were directed to consider and determine whether the first applicant and her son, in this specific regard, respectively, should be permitted to undertake employment and to study pending the outcome of the first regard. So it's not a blanket approval to work and study. If you can read the Wachinuka case, it was with regard to that specific applicant, in other words, herself and her son. And a decision had to be made based on the circumstances before the committee, whether or not the person has the necessary means and know-how to sustain themselves in this regard. So it's not, it wasn't indicated as a blanket approach that every person that applies for asylum may be allowed to work and study. If you look at 90 on the next page, where we said that it's indicated that refugees who are doctors, engineers, nurses, lawyers, etc., that they should also be excluded from being able to find their own employment. What we're indicating there is the department is that those who have particular skills may apply for those appropriate temporary visas in terms of the Immigration Act. We've got the Immigration Act as well. So you can't, because you've got those specific skills, obviously that will be taken into consideration, but you have an application as an asylum seeker, but just because you've got a particular skill, in terms of the Immigration Act, scarce skills, there's a list that needs, there's a whole process that needs to be followed in this regard. And obviously that will then be taken into consideration. So if you want to use it, go to the mainstream Immigration Act and apply for visas in terms of that. Chair, if you go to page 54, with regard to the new section 9C, 1C, read with section 9H, there's a difference of meaning, which it could mean this or it could mean that. What we are indicating that our reading of 9C1C is not as indicated in the comment. The intention of that provision is to deal with the quality assurance before the decision is communicated, and not as an after effect. Which is okay. I mean, you want to make sure that the decision that you're giving after, you're happy with the decision before it's communicated. Once it's communicated, it's communicated. Okay, so we want to make sure that those decisions that go out are indeed, you know, good decisions and have already been scripted for quality, etc. So what we're trying to do in these cases is where decisions are communicated, there's a need for monitoring in order to improve the quality of the decisions of the RSOs, which some of the comments are raising issues with. We've already mentioned that. But we, as a department, have proposed that the provisions of Section 9C2 can be amended to read as follows. And the reason for this is in order to ensure that all the functions of SCRA may be undertaken by a single member and may be considered necessary. So, and I've alluded to this earlier as well, when you look at the Refugee Appeals Authority and you look at SCRA now, any function performed by the Standing Committee in terms of this Act may be determined by a single member. In other words, it deals with the backlog issues, etc., or in particular matters such a number of members as the Standing Committee, as the chairperson may consider necessary. Just on SASA, where there was an issue about reducing the lights, the comment's not clear for us there. We also noted the comment from GBA, which said the Standing Committee must monitor supervise all decisions taken by the refugee status, not made, must. We noted that comment and will be considered. On clause 9, or section 90, we've already, that's the issue about summary dismissal, disciplinary measures, etc., which got to do with appointment of people, the polygraph testing and stuff like that that we've discussed. I've already alluded to that, chairperson. If we move to page 56, the remuneration of SCRA. The issue about how it was worded with the concurrence of with the Minister of Finance is the payment, the remuneration that needs to be done, etc. What we're indicating is that you know, we have the view that the current wording as we have it there, that it should be after consult or in consultation with the Minister of Finance is sufficient in the bill. If we look at the administrative task, which is clause 13 of the bill, that administrative task of SCRA, it's stated there that the independence of SCRA comes under attack of members of the DHA and they may supervise the decisions of the RSTO. We indicating that the provisions deal with administrative work. It's not the core function of SCRA. And the core function of SCRA is being reviewed. So when you deal with administrative, it's not logically possible, as suggested by the comment, that the administrative staff can supervise and monitor members of SCRA. When it comes to admin stuff like leave and stuff like that, that's why that they would. But you cannot say that an administrative person should be taking over the decision making, etc., and telling SCRA how that should be done. So in view thereof, we suggest the deletion of the words monitoring and supervisory in order to give proper meaning to that specific provision. If we look at clause 14, Chair, which deals with crime prevention, it says anti-corruption supported by lie detectors, they're not scientific and should be used, etc. The whole issue about clause 14, as I've indicated earlier, the government has taken a very strong stance on combating corruption, and the provisions, in our view, are in line with that specific stance that has been taken. Page 58, Chair, on the issue of by MKL, also on section 20, capital A, which says a significant delays in services by the RSTOs and the RM increases the likelihood of corruption. Noted the comment, as I've indicated earlier, that there are mechanisms over and above the legislative measures that will also be taken into account and consideration to make sure that the processes that we have at our RFPOs or the refugee reception officers, as well as RAA, are smooth and paperless, etc., and with the view of excluding possibilities of corruption to a very large extent. And basically, the view there is to eradicate it at the end of the day, make sure that it's not really possible. They're just on what we've taken strong stance against corruption, it's just a repetition. Chair, if we go to page 59, which deals with the rejections of applications, to indicate that whilst we have no objections to such a LAC, and that's why that RLAC, they recommended that the section be phrased to allow for exceptions, and then they recommended a specific draft. We are obviously saying that we are happy with the draft that we have in the current legislation, because it deals with what needs to be dealt with. Chair, if you can go to page 61. Where LRC has indicated that they welcome the inclusion of biometrics in the asylum documentation as proposed in section 22.3 of the Refugees Act, and they indicate that this will obviously enable the DHA easily to identify persons to report to refugee reception officers and to avoid conflation and confusion of files and identities. It's noted, with the issue of publications in the media, radio, newspapers, etc., that's an administrative task. That needs to be done in administrative measures and should not be legislated. So you don't put something like where they indicate that we should rather, you know, advertise this in newspapers, etc., communicate it on the media or radio. You don't put that in legislation. It's administrative issues that are dealt with. Chair, if we can move into page 63. Rejection of asylum applications is still for 15 of the bill. The RLAC has indicated they're concerned with the fact that the opportunity to exhaust his or her right of review or appeal was being substituted with the words application has been reviewed in terms of section 24A. But what we indicate is the provision is as in the Act, and the department has just made it more explicit. There's no changes to the principle. So the principle is still there. You must have the opportunity to exhaust your rights, review, etc. It's just making it clearer in terms of the legislation that we currently have. If we look at the issue about the guidelines, again, if you look at MJC and CGT on section 21E of the Act, where it is indicated inconsistent with the independence of the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs, if you look at section 9, capital 2, we indicate that the guidelines of the UNHCR of the handbook is enjoined the applicants to be honest and establish fully the merits of their application. So if there's false or dishonest information in the application, obviously that is something that needs to be taken into consideration. And people then have said that the handbook says you need to provide honest information when you apply for asylum. Turning to page 64, it's just on clause section 21E, it's the same comment as earlier where we indicated you need to generally reject any application of false information. You need to provide honest information when you come there, and you do it. You need to be open and transparent with officials when you apply the information for when you want to apply for asylum. Clause 21.2a on basically we've already dealt with this as well, where you said to require the applicants not declare their spouses and dependents. It's indicated that it would unfairly punish and limit those applicants who do not declare their dependents. And we've already alluded to this, and obviously we're saying that the applicant should be, you know, open about this and indicate, you know, precisely what the issues are, who the dependents are, etc., so that we can make an informed decision, or the refugee reception officer, can, the status determination officer, can make an informed decision based on the merits of the specific application. Turning to page 66, on 21, CIMA and SCCT, where it says that although it's reasonable to expect an individual to lodge an application for as soon as he or she arrives in the country, the issue of the 5-day period again, and I've already indicated, one of the things obviously to encourage people to use the ports of entry is to further deal with security risk of having undocumented migrants or people in the Republic for a longer period. So obviously this is to protect the specific person himself as well against arrest, etc., from other agencies, like the police, etc. And in addition to this, is also to align the provisions of section 23 of the Immigration Act regarding the 5-day period. Chair, we can turn to page, with all the other issues I dealt with, Robert, to page 70, which deals with your clause 16, unaccompanied child and persons with mental disability. I've alluded to this earlier as well, where I've indicated that there are certain aspects in the legislation where you need to comply with other pieces of legislation, and this is the issue where we deal with persons with mental disability who's found under circumstances that clearly indicated the issue of an asylum seeker. Obviously what we're saying there, all the provisions or what we've done with these specific provisions is to insert the words reasonably suspected to have, because we're not experts on health-related matters. What would then happen is the Mental Health Care Act will kick in, and other pieces of legislation that is applicable to specific will kick in, and you will also deal with those specific agencies that have got the necessary know-how in this regard to deal with the matters. See on page 71, if you look at clause 17 dealing with refugee children, where MKL and RLAC indicated provisions needed for children of refugees married to citizens or permanent or other permit holders, and that in as much as this subject provides that the person may apply for asylum, that these be considered for regulated under the Immigration Act. So what we're stating is that regularization in terms of the Immigration Act is obviously within the applicant's right, and the applicant may do so on their own, as the courts have obviously afforded them this opportunity and this right to do. So if a person wants to apply in terms of the Immigration Act, they are more than welcome to do that as well. If you look at asylum seeker visa, which is clause 18, where reference is made to the Ahmed versus Minister of Home Affairs 2016 judgment, where it's indicated asylum seekers apply for temporary residence permits in terms of the Immigration Act, despite that they've got section 22 permits which provide that any previous visa issued to the applicant in terms of the Immigration Act becomes null and void. And then there's an issue about the Directive 21. I just want to indicate that the Ahmed matter is currently the subject of an appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. So the operation of that court has been suspended. It's not an operation. So in other words, the appeal still needs to be dealt with in terms of at the Supreme Court of Appeal. But what we indicate is that any person who applies for a temporary residence visa in terms of the Immigration Act should comply with its requirements. There are certain pre-scribed requirements in terms of the Immigration Act. Furthermore, if you cannot comply with any prescribed requirement, there's a provision in the Immigration Act that allows you to request for an exemption of having to comply with certain of the prescribed requirements. So if you can't, obviously there's a decision, that exemption has to go to the minister, the minister has to make a decision in that regard. So we also indicate that there will certainly be guidelines to implement the provision of Section 2 as it relates to the condition of work in this regard. Still on clause 18, which is asylum seeker visas, on page 72, Chair, which indicates that persons who has expressed his or her intention to seek asylum has the right to remain physically present in South Africa. The renewal of the visa cannot be discretionary. We've indicated what the Wachanuka judgment indicated, and the Wachanuka judgment did not make provision for a blanket condition. I've already alluded to that. And what we seek to do in the bill proposes that each case must be assessed on its own merits, and that is individually. We've looked at the judgment, and we've also explained the judgment in the memorandum on the object of the bill. We also want to indicate that the UNHCR has not submitted any comments to the portfolio committee, as far as we are aware, and commenters cannot now give him mouthpiece and speak on behalf of the UNHCR. And to declare that they're unable to provide aid to asylum seekers. If they of the view that this cannot be done, they should indicate this to us. What the department has, however, proposed is to amend section 22.8b. And what we want to do here is just to add the words "or any other charitable organization or person" after the words UNHCR to also cater for those categories that might be other charitable organizations or persons. A lot of what I've said has been dealt with already. We can now turn to page 89. If you look at 77, they refer to the Wachanuka case again, which I've alluded to already now. In this specific regard, Chair, we're looking at section 22.9 of the bill, and it says that the insertion of section 22.9, this is by CIMA, does not refer to asylum seekers who are self-employed who run their own businesses to earn a living, etc. In fact, two for that, that for asylum seekers who are unable to find employment, are self-employed, that would represent the only means of financial support. And what we're indicating is that the department does not grant asylum business visas, but in terms of what Chinooka has the right to work and study. And obviously that will also be done, as I said, on a case-to-case basis. If you read the Chinooka judgment, it's not a blanket approach. And there are certain processes and procedures in terms of the legislation now that are in place that need to be taken into consideration before providing or giving a indicating whether a person has work or study, and obviously that will be taken by Dunbar's Croft. Obviously the notion of self-employment extends to business regulation matters. And that's regulated by other legislation. So if you look at business visas and things like that, and even in terms of your provinces, there are certain legislation that's also applicable in this regard. Those specific individuals have to comply with those pieces of legislation. Why? Because our South African citizens also have to comply. So if you in South Africa, and you have to comply with the pieces of legislation that we have in South Africa. What the department is, however, indicating is that we're suggesting that the words "or any other compelling reason of similar nature" must be included or added to the specificity. So we think that that would also go a long way in assisting in clarifying. Chair, we can move to page 94. All the others are a petition that we've dealt with already. Clause 19, which is for the detention of asylum seekers, where mention is made of, in terms of children, the Refugees Act states that the detention of a child must be used only as a measure of last resort and for the shortest appropriate period of time. And what we're saying, the proposed amendment is of a technical nature to change permit to visa, and the provision has always existed. It's always been there. And I can indicate in this regard, if there are children in Mandela, for instance, that arrive, they are housed in places of safety. They're not kept in Mandela. And even if they are mothers in this regard, they are kept together, and so you do not keep children. It does happen when people arrive there, but obviously then you have to do the separation. So that is done, where children are not kept in those specific circumstances. Chair, if we look at clause 20 of the law, which deals with decisions regarding asylum, I've already alluded to this, where we need to indicate that the department has noted, in this specific regard, an error of having omitted to align the provisions of section 245A as contained in the Amendment Act of 2011. As the committee will recall, there's a 2008 Amendment Act, a 2011 Amendment Act. These two pieces of legislation will be brought into operation. There's cross-referencing that needs to be fixed, etc. Those two pieces of legislation will be brought into operation as soon as this bill is also finalized, and everything will then come into operation at the same time. What will then happen is all the specific sections have been pulled in line and have been checked and cross-checked, etc., which is that has been finalized. What we're indicating here is that we must substitute the word Director General with the word Standing Committee. And in this regard, there needs to be the following insertion as a new paragraph D. And obviously the current paragraph D will then become E, and it's proposed that it should read as follows. The substitution for paragraph A of subsection 5 of the following paragraph, and then 5A will become an asylum seeker whose application for asylum has been rejected in terms of subsection 3B and confirmed by, and this is by the Director General, obviously that is done in terms of the legislation now by the Standing Committee. So it's just a technical error that is being corrected. So what we're saying, it should be the Standing Committee in terms of section currently reads 24A3, it should read 24A. Included, must be dealt with in terms of the Immigration Act. So that's the amendment there. If you look at clause 21, Chair, with regard to review by the Standing Committee, we've indicated there was a matter that Abdi Laban Muhammad matter, where the case High Court held that the SCRA, and it deals with the functus officio rule, that SCRA is only functus officio, meaning that they can't take any further decision or can't entertain the matter anymore. When the Refugee Status Determination Officer advises a failed asylum seeker of SCRA's decision. In other words, there's that oversight that's also been done, etc. So, in view hereof, and in order to clarify the provisions of the Section 24, capital A, sub 3, the addition of the following words is proposed. We indicating that we should include the words whether the standing, where after the Standing Committee will be functus officio, making it clear in terms and in line with the court decision in the Opti matter. Chair, with regard to clause 22, referral of decisions back to the RSTO by the Refugee Appeals Authority, a lot of noise being made that you can't refer this matter back because what happened currently is that your Refugee Appeals Authority would be hearing cases day over. So matter will come to the Refugee Appeals Authority. What then happens is they see that there's new information that's come to the fore. So your Refugee Appeals Authority then starts acting as a matter of first instance, usurping the functions of the Refugee Status Determination Officer. And what we're saying is, in this regard, and for the Refugee Appeals Authority to function effectively and efficiently, those matters need to be resubmitted back to the Refugee Status Determination Officer to take into consideration new facts that have come to the fore, and then because it might change the decision at the end of the day. And you can't have a situation for a body like the Refugee Appeals Authority being seized with these specific matters. Here on page 97, when we look at the continuous residence issue, which indicated that in relation to the proposed section 27C, the deep concern regarding the proposed increase in years of continuous residence in South Africa from 5 to 10 years, etc., we indicated that the proposed period in order, no person who is granted refugee status will be in limbo. The issue being made is that people will be in limbo for 10 years. No. If you are granted refugee status, you're not in limbo for 10 years. You've got all the rights that a South African says except the right to vote. You've got right to health care, you've got right, all of that is there. So the statement to say that you're in limbo is incorrect, Chair, with all due respect. The issue about applying for permanent residence does not grant any new rights, because even our permanent residents in South Africa, they don't have the right to vote. It's the same as, so they have precisely the same, like a refugee and a permanent resident has the same right, so there's nothing being taken away or added, etc. So nobody's in limbo. I've already spoken to the issue of the Dabone judgment, the issue of the Directive 21 related to the Dabone judgment. We're currently addressing that. This is the matter that's the subject of appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal currently in the Ahmed matter, Chairperson. Chair, we can move to page 99. But I've actually already dealt with that here. You can see in the letter the case of Mustafa, the Dabone judgment. There was an application was lodged to conform to declare certain provisions of the Latin Immigration Act, etc. This matter is currently the subject of appeal to the constitutional matter, up to the Supreme Court of Appeal Policy Chair. Chair, we can move to page 101 regarding the withdrawal of refugee status. And there the RLAC is indicated that perplexed to note that the provisions of this section depart from those contained in Regulation 17 of the regulations, which provide, amongst others, that notice must be given to the refugee chair. In this regard, we want to indicate that regulations are subordinate legislation. You cannot have regulations that contradict your legislation. So what we're doing is, if there's legislation that indicates your regulations will have to be amended to be in line with your act. It can't be the other way around. And we're saying that PAJA, as I've indicated quite clearly earlier as well, is an integral element of the process of withdrawal, as is referred to in Section 36 of the Act. It is there. If you want to withdraw refugee status, there is a process that has to be followed. In terms of the legislation currently there, PAJA is referred to specifically. If we look at Clause 24, Chair, with regard to also the removal and detention of refugees and asylum seekers, it's indicated that section has to put in line, the section has to put in line, as the comment, with section 53.1 of the Constitution, where the minister orders that a refugee asylum seeker categories of either to be removed from the public on grounds of national security, national interest, etc. Yeah. Our view is that this highlights obviously the absurdity of people making applying in South Africa for a visa. Because the norm is that you have to go back to your country of origin to apply for your visa from there to the immigration. And so what this just highlights also the problem that if you apply for certain visa and you don't go back and there are no checks and balances in this regard, the problem that we experience currently in South Africa, and this is the issue about the army judgment that I mentioned earlier, but which is currently the subject of appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal. Okay, so Chair, if we can deal with Section 28, the issue about the proposed camps and detention centres, and who will cover the charges, etc. Obviously, we've not made any proposal for camps. It's not part of our policy that you've got detention camps or detention centres, etc. So we're not sure where this comment comes from. If you look at clause 24 on page 103, Chair, the removal and detention of refugees and asylum seekers, LRC, they're concerned for the proposed section 28.5, which allows for the detention of refugees until they are removed, and it signifies a move towards increasing encampment of this vulnerable group. We just think that the provisions of section 28.5 have always been in the Principal Act. How? It was there at section 28.4. The provision is not obligatory, but it's discretionary, and the concerns raised about it is not, now being misinformed, because it's a discretion and it's got some must make. So there's discretion in this regard. And it's always been there in the legislation. Chair, if you look at clause 25 and 26, which deals with the requirements to inform persons of the change of address, it's indicated there that the 2016 draft bill proposes to introduce the requirement that refugees and asylum seekers are to inform the refugee of his or her residential address, changes to the within 30 days, etc. We're saying that the issue relating to change of address, it's already contained in the 2011 Amendment Act. And as I indicated earlier, you've got the 2008 Amendment Act, 2011. It's already there. It was approved. It's gone. No problems. So, and it's one of the standard provisions that's applicable to citizens as well in the country. If you're a citizen and you change address, there's an obligation on you to obviously inform the relevant authorities of the change of address. And there are other pieces of legislation that this also requires of specific individuals. So, should the time period of 30 days be deleted, our view is that there would be no obligation on the part of the asylum seeker to comply. So if you don't make it specifically that it is within 30 days and you leave it open-ended, what happens if it's not now? So you have to be clear in this regard, it's just providing that. Chair, with regard to clause 27, the withdrawal of refugee status, once again reference to PACHA, it's noted, obviously PACHA applies in any event. The provisions of clause 27, which substitute section 36, they've always been in the legislation. It was then the Principal Act, and the concerns raised of this because it was there. We're not sure why the concerns come out. It's always been there. The Department, however, suggested the following words included, provided that no such notice is required if the withdrawal is requested by the refugee concerned. So if the refugee, he or herself, comes and says, I want to go back or resign. There is a process in place in terms of section 36 that there needs to be a withdrawal in this regard. But that we then say that if the individual comes to the fore and says that they want to do this, there's no need to publish this notice in this regard. And we also furthermore suggest to amend section 36.3 to substitute the word resolved. So we resolve that for the word issued and ordered. So the word resolved is just basically replaced for the word issued and ordered. Chair, coming to the end now with issues that are not contained in the bill, and it's mentioned here by CCL and JCW, etc., where if a child is found in circles that clearly indicate he or she is a child in need of care and protect, must he or she be brought before a children's court. I've already alluded to this, and the issues of children are already addressed in the previous Amendment Act, which is the 1998 and 2011 amendments. And furthermore, there's clear reference made to the Children's Act, etc., and I've indicated that where it falls within the ambit authority of other government departments, etc., those specific institutions must and will be approached for assistance in this regard, as it falls within their specific mandate. If you look at page 107, Chair, the asylum seeker and refugee children, the issue about children, so there's no mention of asylum seeker refugee children in the 2016 draft bill, and we just indicated that the issues of children already addressed in the previous amendments, which are on the 1998 and 2011 amendments. Chair, with that, we come to the end of our presentation. We're all here to assist colleagues in answering any questions that may be put to us. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone among the delegation of Roma Affairs that wants to add anything or amplify. Are you satisfied that you have been represented properly? Now, thank you very much. And honorable members, is it possible for us to have about 3 minutes? Just 3 minutes to 5 minutes, and then reorganize our things in our head and documentation, and then we can have a drink and then come back and speak to this, and you will assist me whether we should look at the submissions on a cross by cross basis, the responses that we have, so that we don't find ourselves running around the whole government. Let's have our 5 minutes and then and come back around the 5 minutes past 11. Thank you.
They need you, you have to send you, and you have to send you. even if they use readable zones, because if you scan the files, it actually pulls up, the system pulls up the information showing that this passport is invalid. So the use ticket doesn't work. And we made it very clear to, in fact, we had one of the diplomats traveling with an extended file. And he said to them that we can't allow them. And I don't know why I didn't say that. The Israeli state is not
going to not money.
Money. We don't know why they are extending passport and not issuing new passport.
I thought it was a rare thing.
No.
You're telling me it's a very common thing.
It's a common thing.
But it's going to give our guys headaches.
Yes. But what we are doing is we are returning them. We are returning them. And we see now that they are actually issuing passports.
Yeah, and until they confidently stop putting their guns.
Yes.
Right.
No problem.
Okay. Mm. Did you send an email to me?
Yes, I did.
Within the parliament?
Yes, in the parliament.
Okay, I had a problem with the passcode. I'll pick it up when I come back.
You can give me another one.
Yeah, another one. Don't come back. Let me just use the one that is easier to email. Yes.
Mm.
I'm sorry for that.
I
Thank you.
I think we can get ourselves ready in a minute or so. Transitional provisions. 31, Psalm 1. Any matters pending before the Refugee Appeal Board, immediately before this act takes effect, must be regarded as matters before the Refugee Appeals Authority in terms of the principal act as amended by this act. Then sub 2, any decisions and determinations made by the Refugee Appeal Board in terms of the principal act immediately before this act takes effect remain in force. I think I'm not sure whether any decisions, any matters, whether they comply with some good English of people. Can just a little bit, if it is correct, it's fine. I have that English C or something like that. Okay, just verify whether you can say any matters or any decisions so that it is readable. Are we clear with that one? All right, and then get to the definitions. On the area of definitions, is there anything that they should explain themselves? I'll go a little bit faster. None. Then plus 2. Exclusion from refugee status on page 17. There's a suggestion by the department there. To remove in any way and substitute in the prescribed circumstances. Okay.
Okay, we're busy noting, we're just discussing, but I'll hand over to...
Yeah, that's the gentleman just behind you, because it looks like what happened on our left. And can you explain page 11, the ball on the right-hand side of the bottom?
Thanks, Chair, Honorable Members. We are changing the work permit to visa, and therefore the reference to asylum seeker visa and asylum... changing for family, just saying when we look at the field at the moment we do not see or pick up where the inconsistency, but I think as we go we'll be able to adjust it. But it's more about asylum seeker permit to asylum seeker visa. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let's move back to close to all the exclusion. The area of exclusion. Page 33. Is it possible just for you to explain your comment, Rasmus? A little bit elaborate.
She just basically comes down to say that when we use the words in any way in that specific session, we're saying that basically what we want to do is each case we will deal with on its own merits. In other words, each and every case that you receive, you will deal with that in based on the information that you have before you in terms of that own specific case.
The comment that you have there on the right hand side, page 48. Can you explain how you are going to deal with the potential legal action? That may question. determining which matter should be held by one, which matter should be held by two, which matter should be held by three. Because surely where you've got one person hearing the matter, and then and understand that somebody else's matter was held by three, then may believe that no, he has been prejudiced by one mind, and then once the matter to be referred to three, or what is the process that will determine the chairperson to decide? Now this one must be held by two, one, whatever, because it may be the source of some sort of legal challenge. Where people may believe that the India matter is held by two or three may have had a better outcome than by one. I'm sure we have had it through the public hearing and all that. If we introduce this kind of an amendment where you are putting a discretion of the chairperson to decide whether it's one or two or three, that must look into the particular matter. How would you actually deal with that? Or do you see that it may be bringing some areas of legal challenge? I'm waiting to hear Dion. If you are still going to discuss the consequences of this kind of an amendment as well, you have not yet discussed it, it's fine. I mean, you have been given time to go and talk. But from my side, I'm just seeing that in this kind of discussion may actually bring some sort of legal challenges. And you may proceed if there's anything to comment.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to indicate in this regard, if we've taken this into consideration, obviously because there's a discretion, we know anybody can bring a matter to court should they wish to do so. So if they feel affronted by the decision that was made by the chair as to why this should be heard by an individual member, etc., people are very open to take that to court. And one will have to deal with it. Obviously the chairperson, and I don't want to speak on their behalf, but the chairperson of both SCRA and the RAA would have to take certain matters into consideration. Is this, like for instance, the complexity of the matter, etc., etc., that they'll have to take into consideration in order to make such a decision. But that decision is open. If somebody is going to be unhappy with that, it might be taken, we might be taken to court on that, and obviously one will then have to deal with that specific matter based on the information that the chairperson used to apply his own mind in deciding whether or not this matter should be heard by an individual member.
Yeah, that will come in.
Thank you. I just wanted to check, according to your experience, do you have enough human capital to deal with, to have three people at the same sitting all the time?
Yeah, proceed.
Thanks, Jane. Our view in this regard is no, we do not have. There's not enough, and in any event, as you said to the individual members, you can be taken, remember that decision, even if it is done by an individual member, can be taken on review. Budget is always applicable. So there are checks and balances in place in which they can deal. But currently, as I've indicated, we do have a problem in the centre. Where you have to sit as a quorum to deal with these matters, it's problematic, because and that's why backlogs are created, etc. And there are cases, which are clear cut, where you can sit as individual members to finalise these matters. But chair, the chairperson of SCRA and RAA is also here. Maybe they also want to input in this regard from their side.
No, save you from the wrath now. Just say, you see what we're trying to say, Dion, is that remember that one of the main intentions of this amendment is to release human resources, to be able to fast-track the process. But this amendment looks like it's bringing it to the back of the problem that you're trying to solve. You see, and then when you are now making that kind of amendment, then you may have majority of people's cases then being preferred to be heard by more people. you see, then you are bringing back the same problem that you are trying to resolve. That's what we just saying. Because ordinarily a case held by one person and a case held by more than one person, at least the one that has got more minds than one, we may think that it has been properly considered. If we find ourselves in that kind of situation. But if you don't create it, it will move it. So that everybody is very clear that no, this case is still being held by one person. And then if crowd or whatever at any given time decides just to deploy another person to go and be an observer, it's fine. But as long as the law speaks that one person will be hearing, and then it is fine. But once you open it legally, that a case may be heard or looked at by more than one, then there will be intent for people to demand their issues to be heard by more than one. And then we'll be back to square one, where we try to move from. That's what just like the question has. But I mean, the members will debate it as time comes next week, and then you will respond. Probably, maybe you will have had adequate time to look at it on the benefits of this particular amendment, and also the problem that it may bring, and then to balance and assist us. And then remuneration of scribes, I think that is clear, administration task, then the crime prevention area on 14. Nothing. On the rejection of applications, I'm not sure about one thing. I think during the public hearing, we were hearing this issue that people, when they cross the border, then they must be at the reception office within 5 days. And there was an argument from other presenters that why not stick to the 10 days. And I remember also even asking one of the presenters why they say 10 days, not 30 days. What informs the 10 days? What informs the 5 days? And then it was a little bit difficult for us to get clarity through that. But now, a little bit of attention to this matter, then I now understand that we speak as if we have an office at the port of entry. A person gets in there, then gets a temporary visa or something. Then within 5 days, then that person must be in our office to lodge an application. Now, that speaks to a person that is in an office, gets that temporary visa. 5 days, within 5 days, must be in Marawasta. That's the correct understanding. But the question is, getting at our border to that office to get that temporary visa, is there anything that due to that area? Because when you reach the office at the port of entry to get a temporary visa, which allocates 5 days to go to Marawasta or whatever, then that one understands. But between the border and that first office at the port of entry, where you may be helping people that cross somewhere else. I'm raising these honorable members because the people that are running away from danger, they would ordinarily not come through the port of entry. Because if they have to do that, they must come through their own port of entry. And which they're going to arrive there without either papers, and then they may be locked and sent back to jail in their own country. the likelihood is that they're going to avoid the port of entry and come through some other hole somewhere else. But then once they've crossed the border, what happens until they come to our office and get that temporary visa to go to Marabasta? Or they say this one too. Yes. And then, is there anything that talks to them? And when we adjudicate their applications, like as you said, is that some of the history of them entering, how they come in and all that, does it play any role? If somebody has crossed the border about 4 months back, then goes back to Messina, and then get into our office, then he gets that 5 days in, then he comes back now to this one to the center. And then with other interrogation indicates that now across the border about 4 months back, and then before that day that is on the temporary. How does that affect? How do you deal with that kind of information? Is it crucial? Is it prejudicial? What is it? You can, if you are not ready, you can think about it. You'll have to move forward and then. And then when you are ready, then you can comment on it, on any other point that you maybe answer before. If you are ready, you can say that one.
Thank you, Mr. President, and the member of the committee. I will attempt to respond to the question and if I meant something that the colleagues will assist. First, I think we need to clarify the issue of running away from persecution in the context of South Africa and the refugees or asylum seekers that we receive. We have said in our responses that we, for the SADC member states or our neighboring countries, we do look at it differently vis-a-vis people who are coming, for example, from Asia, from Somalia, because we are of the view that you cannot be pursued across so many countries into South Africa, and you said you could not enter into a port of entry, and therefore you needed to, because you were being pursued, you needed then to use any other entry point except the port of entry. So we said, should that person be, for example, coming from Lesotho, from our Mozambique, from our Zimbabwe, neighboring countries, and say, I do not have documents, and I've crossed, and I've crossed through this, this whatever point that I've crossed, which is not a designated port of entry. We'll look at that. But again, we are also saying, even those that would have crossed, but coming from far away from our neighboring region, we're not saying that person should not apply. We are saying that person must be able to explain to us, to the department, how it has happened that you do not have documents. And after listening to, or after receiving that response, it forms part of the adjudication, so it's not excluded. That the explanation that I could not cross through a designated port of entry coming from Ethiopia after having transited through so many countries, and it's difficult in the African context that you will move away from ports of entry, cutting across 5 member states or 5 countries of the continent. But of course, let me say, because our regime includes before it excludes, we will then take that response into consideration after the person has been interviewed by our immigration officials and then taken into adjudication, and that information forms part of the adjudication processes. The 5 days, as I think Dion responded to, is aligned firstly with the Immigration Act that it is 5 days. Secondly, all our international ports of entry have the facilities or the offices that will be able to issue you Form 23. Under the Immigration Act, which is a transit document, once you say you are seeking asylum, and therefore allow you 5 days to get into the nearest refugee reception office. In Musina, we have a refugee reception office. It's just 15 minutes away from the border. therefore we expect that you don't even need 5 days. In fact, 5 days becomes too long. If you were crossing through the Lubombo, we are of the view that your nearest would be maybe a Desmond Tutu refugee reception office, which you don't need more than 48 hours to reach that point of entry. And so we have taken those into consideration, that our major ports of entry are not beyond 72 hours to reach. And it is important and also safe for the person to immediately submit himself into the process of adjudication so that he can be issued with the most able enabling document if it's the person of concern. If it's not, then the person of concern be assisted whether to return to his country or other processes that needs to follow. Chairperson, I hope I have responded.
Well, I have thought that you have explained, but you have not explained the real question that I'm asking. The real question that I'm asking is, how would you process this information? How would you use the information? A Mozambican crossing through the Lubombo, somewhere around the mountains between Mozambique and the Nkoma and the area. Then you say the nearest office is Desmond Tutu. But this person, after crossing, then cycles in Nkoma. Then he finishes 30 days there, 40 days or 3 months in Nkoma within the community there. And then he realizes that, no, I need to get to Desmond Tutu to go and get the document. And he comes there, Desmond Tutu, and he declares that I came in 6 months back. How to deal with that kind of information? And then when you are assessing the application, that's what I was asking you to try to check with yourself.
Firstly, Chairperson and the committee, that we are putting these measures to encourage people to come to our offices as soon as possible. However, of course, there will be people like those that will not comply with that. It is for their benefit that they come to the office. Now, if you do not come and you come 6 months later, and you then tell us that you were stationed in Omazo or any other area for 6 months, and only now, whatever circumstances that have forced you now to decide to come to the office, which were not there all this time, and therefore you, as part of that interview that will be conducted by the immigration officials and handed over, once the interview is concluded, the interview that is conducted by the immigration officers is not an adjudication for the refugee claim, but rather determining why you have stayed, why you do not have a transit visa, and for how long have you stayed in the country, and why did you decide to stay for this long without the transit visa, and at what point have you determined in your mind that you need protection. And once then we have that report forms part of the preliminary information that will be in your file when it goes for now the interview for the actual claim, which is the asylum claim. So I'm saying that interview and the report of that interview of why you stayed for this long, what means were you using and why did you do it, it's going to form part of that adjudication. Well, then in the adjudication, the adjudicator would want to know further in relation to your claim. At what point in this 6 months you felt that you need protection? And why are you coming now? And what kind of a claim? And what has changed in your country from the first day you arrived in South Africa to the 6 months that now may propel you, instead of returning to your country, rather seeking asylum? So I'm saying that the outcome of the interview that is conducted by the immigration official is then handed over to form part of the information that will be used in the adjudication for the asylum claim that you would have thought about 6 months later. But I think
Chairman, basically to say this, remember, no decision is taken at that point in time. Now, as to change the question, is it going to be negative, is it going to be positive, that's something that falls within the ambit of the relevant RSTO. When they have, there might be very well or good reasons as to why a person only 6 months, 3 months or 6 months later indicated and presented themselves. That will then be taken into account, as Mr. Mandla has indicated, in the decision-making process by the Refugee Status Determination Officer. But what should be clear here is that nobody is excluded from applying for asylum or for refugee status based on the fact that they do not have a Section 23 permit in their possession when they present themselves to the Refugee Reception Office Chair.
Okay. Let's move forward. Any other issue, honorable members? That I had, I think they are dealt with. If not, if there's none, then I think we can conclude this particular responses from the department. And then we will meet next week where we talk to ourselves. And Honorable Hussein is indicating that they want to make some sort of a submission on some of the proposals. And if it is possible, Honorable Hussein, if you could just try and forward a copy of the proposal to him at least some 2-3 days so that we can also be able to respond to it, or other members to respond to it, and also we can forward it to the department so that when they come back here next week on Tuesday, then they should be aware. It's always important that we get the correct responses when people have applied their mind. And then we should not catch them with their pants down, because then the possibility is that they may not give us the well-considered responses. Honourable members, I think that's it with the responses, and then thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much to your Chair and the Honourable Members. I wonder if at this stage we could get an indication from you, arising from the public participation and the comments, as we went through our responses, we would have noted various suggestions that we were making for inclusion into the amendment bill. And I wonder if at this stage it would be in order for us to then submit to you at the next sitting a document that incorporates some of those suggested changes for your consideration.
Yeah, I think by next week, I think it should come and form part. I'm sure maybe what we will do is that the first 20 minutes or so, then we may be giving you where, so that we take us exactly where these are included. And then when we discuss the members, then we'll look at it, also including those, and whether we kick them out, then we kick them out with the right foot. And whether we put them in, we put them in the right hand, and then we move forward. And I think that is also like as we were saying to Hussein, if it is possible that when you finalize the document that talks to that inclusion of the proposal, if we can get it a little bit earlier by it, would it be early Thursday night? Thursday night, and then it gets, and then can send it through to all of us, and probably it will also give Honorable Hussein to think about it as well on main proposals, which of course as well we would expect that if we could receive this by Thursday night as well, then it will afford all of us to be free with the contents of those documents so that we are able to move forward. So thank you very much. And can we then now look at the report? And I just hope that members have actually looked at the report. It's the first one. The delegation from Home Affairs, because these are part of the public hearing, I don't think that we need all of you. If there are those that have got other things to do, then they are, I think they have the liberty to disappear. But it is important that we have at least some minimum number that when you go through this report and if our members are changing anything, then we can be aware. But we are actually released. Not a problem. This is the committee now work. Thank you. Okay, honorable members, are you all having copies of the draft report of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, on public hearing, on the Refugees Amendment Bill, B12-2016? And then with no date there, but in February 2017. Are we having that document? Okay. And then can we look at page one of you? Is there anybody that's raising any issue with page one? Just accept the date. The date would insert it if for today's date if you agree to it. None. On page two, you've got no issues on page two. Page three. So that I'm not run away from you. On page 7, paragraph 2.8, second paragraph, the DHA and the 96%. Is
page 8. None. Page 9. Page 9 is the last page. If you have got no issues, anyone to raise their hand and move for the agreement with this particular report. Members have got no issues with the report, and they should approve it. Somebody can raise their hand and say, I move for the adoption of the report. Then somebody says, yes, I agree. I second to the move. As long as you don't move out of this office, of course.
I have to do the same thing, but I will not move if I can't.
Well, today you are in the meeting. That movement approval also involves you, then you can move because you have realized that the members have got no issues. You can assist them because they don't want to move.
I move that we adopt the report.
Okay, and the move has been made. Anyone that seconds me? Honorable Kenyon?
Second.
You second the move. Then they will present me with a report that has got a date at the top, it's not over a draft. So that then I can deal with it. Then the next report is the one that talks to the second and the third term expenditure and performance report. Also, of course, is with only the date that is missing. It was going to be today's date if you agree to this report. Thank you very much and for enjoying our processing of our own report. Then can you also do the same in the looking at page? I wonder whether there are page numbers, but the documents I'm having are not page numbers. They are dealing with me. Can you just number that document so that we follow each other, starting with the first pages, page 1. Then it should be having about 7 pages. Are we done with the numbering? And then let's look at page 1. On page 1, there's paragraph under 1 introduction. That's the last word, DHH performance. Why is it different from the previous one? So now, this one after the DHA, then you have the S and that talks to the performance of the DHA. Yes. Why is it written different? You see this one? The other one is just wrote DHA 96%. Yes. Okay, just try and be uniform then. Yes. Is there any issue about page 1? None, and that they met.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Under outcome one, don't we have to have these infect IDs and investigate test performance and all that? Can you talk about that? Better registration.
I think Adam can explain, because this I think it is he has just copied as is
from the strategic plan. When they enumerate the details of the strategic, in their strategic plan, there is those sub targets, but this is over the bigger target. So the four probably under all eligible citizens, the first one, and then the sub details of that outcome 1.1, if you want to call it.
In the meeting when we satisfied, that is what I'm trying to change. I don't remember.
Briefly, on page 2, there's more details of the amount of births registered within 30 days. You'll see half of the page bullet 2. So there's more detail that they give us. Deliberation starts towards the end of the document.
Yeah, this area here they just put a restating. Restating what has just been presented, the cut and paste situation here. Yeah? So they just take it as it is, just trying to say these are the things that the department was talking to. And then on page 2, that's what in now starts talking to performance on page 2. That talks to the targets and all the performance statistics. Megan? feel that if there's a disjuncture between what they have achieved here together with the target, then you can make that observation for the head of observations. And then they can speak to it. Yeah, it looks like there is a general comment that talks to the decline to achievement of the target. Okay,
no. Perhaps was that the impact on the national staff or what? Because you remember they are complaining that we are suffering in the department, we are asked to do more things, but we are not allowed to increase staff at that.
Honourable Member, you remember that the department when it was presenting on this, they have said that in December, they had a target which was ordinarily the same as the other quarters, but whereas in that particular quarter, then they had low numbers of staff because many have taken leave. And therefore the registration of the birth over that particular period then was affected. Because then they did not have the full complement of their staff because of those that have taken leave on the third quarter. I think that's the explanation that was given. And, I think right on the page 6, the paragraph in the middle. That's some of the things that I think that was explained. And then I think it even indicated that moving forward,
yeah,
their target that goes to the third quarter where there is the effect of the festive season, where their staff takes leave, that will be adjusted. It will not be the same as other quarters because there were too much optimistic, whereas then they always have less staff during that particular period. Okay. So of course that what you have raised on the group measure that in relation to staff that the country plays ordinarily would affect the performance of this party. And that decision of January 2016 of actually extracting departments to cut and not to replace in order for them to play within certain caps. And then with a department like Home Affairs that depends on home bodies, the likelihood is that it will be affected, just like health, like education. They will be directly affected. Once you say they must cut staff, then you are cutting the production line. Yes. Okay. Where are we now? I'm now lost. I was on page, we now going to page 3. I think the figures there that are in the middle, then Adam must make sure that those figures are correct, taken exactly as is from the report of the department, and make sure that you assist us with that. And then on page 4, do you have any issues there? On page 4, then you've got a bullet that has got nothing. there are paragraphs speaking that are actually different in size. On page 5,
yeah, but what I'm saying
saying is that this figure that we have on the budget, are we having three zeros at the end, all of them, because usually it is written on top of the box that it is in thousands, but this one there is no indication that. You need to set it at the top to show that there are three zeros at the end of each number. Okay. Otherwise, then it may not be saying what it's. Okay, I think that correction will need to be done. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just for purposes of clarity, first, can you hear the number actually of organization? Is that 2 billion or?
Yeah, 2 billion.
Okay. And then the self-financing, the 0% must disappear. Because without the budget, then you can't express the percentage. But just leave it blank or just put a dash. Then now on page 6, then the very first sentence, right at the end, no, the second sentence, right at the beginning, it should be concern, not consent. The only correction that Adam showed me here. And then can we just look at that contextualization of the CETA issue, whether it has been covered correctly? Are you happy about that paragraph? Okay, let's look at the recommendations on page 7.
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, we talked about the 30 days payment to suppliers, and it does not appear. I think it should not disappear because it is in line with supporting small enterprises, particularly. And the President has spoken about it. That's what he said in the last week. And I believe for purposes of oversight,
I think also we spoke in, I'm not sure whether it was with the department, about the employment of the people with disability, the children, that even though that is not in their target, but because the requirement of state, that there must be some report on it as we move forward. Yes, whether the department is complying to that, whatever. Then the recommendations, 4.1, the VDA should consider to spending its allocation per quarter as close as possible to the linear projection of 75%. I think this one is not the recommendation. This just follows.
Yes, I think definitely this should follow. But if it is, for instance, 50%, it should, they should explain why. Mm-hmm. Because in some instances, the lump of money spent, meant to be spent in the last quarter, and then that explanation has got to be given if it is less than 75%.
Because you see, now the thing is that if we put it as a recommendation, that means it's not what they do. And whereas that is it's a norm, in fact. It's a norm. And then we can only report on their deviation. We can only deal with their deviation. Yeah, I think you just take that one out. DH consider conducting an outreach program on the benefits of acquiring the smart ID card and phasing out of the green ID book? From my side, it's fine. Yeah. And then 4.3, which will be renumbered properly. The issue of the unviable network provision by CETA to the DHA and the end should have disappeared. It should be resolved urgently so that safety device does not continue to be affected. I think let's remove the last part. We just need the issue of the unreliable network provision by CETA to the DHA should be resolved urgently and stop there. Because the other one just simply explains what has already been communicated. National Treasury should consider exempting DHA on budget cuts. Budget cuts. As it affects service delivery. Undermines the security of the state. That's a serious allegation. That last part. You're throwing stones. Let's stop there and service deliver. It undermines service deliver. Definitely. And then of course is that part of the service delivery is securing the state. Okay? Okay, yeah, are you accommodated?
Yes.
Okay. Tiglen? You look to be satisfied and very happy. The only thing is that you can't see. Okay. So, honourable members, if that is what we are capable of doing, okay.
On the communication. I think we had also, now I'm thinking about the national treasury issue. There was a concern of changes of policies, of policies in accounting and other country policies. I remember us talking about the recommendation that talks to concern of us. We're concerned about the change of accounting policy in the region of the year.
Yeah, that one was, that is in the report of the BRR.
Oh, okay.
It's in the BRR in the areas of the Auditor General.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. So you said the Auditor General must evaluate the cases, must liaise with national treasury.
That one is accommodated in the BRR report. Speaker?
No, Chairperson, it's only a concern about the joint meeting that they had. Where we were promised there will be no more problems today with the quality.
The networks.
We cannot be offline because it's the state. Now, my concern, which is the best way that we can deal with this issue, you only mentioned there that this must be resolved. Now, is there no way that the ministers can meet together and then they can resolve this?
Yeah, remember that in that specific meeting, the new CEO of CETA promised us heaven and earth. And but we did really advise him that he mustn't think that things in government work faster like in private sector, because you are coming from private sector. Because you are promising us within 3 months that we will change all sorts of things. But now it looks like it is not the case. That's why I want to arrange a meeting again with telecommunications, again with him, so that he reviews what he said. Because remember that the biggest issue here is that we want Home Affairs to be exempted from being obliged to get services from CETA, because CETA is actually not assisting, so that Home Affairs can have a direct service provider, which they can link with to ensure that the whole thing is run smoothly. currently the CITAC, this CITAC group, I think Home Affairs is the third on the line. There is CITAC and there are other service providers that go to the end before then they give service to Home Affairs office. Always the reporting of the downtime also goes through that that line, which sometimes is that even office is down now. A CITAC will only know maybe 4, 5, 6 hours later because of the chain that is on that line. And so we really need to actually bring telecommunications as well as CITAC so that they can actually help themselves and say we have faith. And then the engagement now to finalize the exemption, then it should be much more easy. Because it was a little bit difficult beforehand, because this is the CEO has promised that he was going to make miracles. And okay, anyone that wants to move for adoption, if no further input is made on the document. Is that a question?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think Chairperson, in the deliberation, a concern was expressed around their security people giving direction to people that this is now the line cut off, and then the way they related with clients. And the committee expressed its concern. They said that they did not have runners like overnight banks, and therefore they use the services of untrained security personnel to deal with their clients. And then in the process, the image of the Department of Home Affairs gets taken. I do not know exactly how that discussion ended, but I think as part of the deliberations, there were proposals that they should have personnel training interacting with clients. But I still to be reminded because it was quite some time ago. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's, if you look at the recommendation of 4.5, the last recommendation, then actually talks to all these other problems, because the explanation that the DG gave, of course, was that they just don't have adequate personnel that they can put runners and all that, and hence they just make use of those officers to actually manage the flow of people into the office. But that last point, recommendation, actually seeks to deal with all those shortcomings. And then, unless if we speak that we may have missed to have a paragraph on the body of the report, I think that is what may be a little bit more, so that it must not look like we have never spoken about it. If we have on page, on page six, where then we had the discussion, and then if we can just have a paragraph that speaks to the security officers being used as Home Affairs officials to manage the people that visit the offices of Home Affairs. If you can just put that particular paragraph in there, I think it should really Any mover? Mekin?
On the
last
and
send
that close to the relevant by the
committee.
It was a great concern in the committee. Now, I just want to remind you.
You are on page 6.
So, yes, on page 6. Okay. And I just want to remind you, they didn't have any information on this issue. It was a great concern in the committee. The issue of Home Affairs and National Relations on this committee relevant. I remember having a conversation with this issue, but I'm not quite sure what the comment is.
documents in that way. So that makes it a qualified audit because documents are not accounted for in the audit. There are funds which are not accounted for by the document, vice versa. Did we have any information on this issue from after having that process?
Yeah, it's only that this particular item of the revenue collected by them, we spoke too much in this meeting as well as the one for the PRR. I think in the one of the PRR that we talked too much about this, and then also understanding that they are too close to finalizing a bit. But with this one, why we did have a concern on this one is because the DG then said that the current arrangements, which we thought it was finalized, that he has to record the money that he told that has been collected. But if the actual amount is transferred to a national revenue fund, then if there is a difference, then it is him that must explain the difference, which is then a problem. Then we believe then that this matter is not yet finalized, it creates problems. Because then if there is any shortage, if the document says that they've collected 2 million and only 1.5 million is deposited, then it will affect the audit outcome of Home Affairs. And then the DG was saying that he needs to get this off completely. And therefore then account for what they've done. Then hence we picked up that no, this matter is not final, this matter is still creating problems. That's how why we take the call it as such. Thank you. But probably then we may on the recommendation then we may include a recommendation that talks to that the issue about revenue collected by Delco be resolved speedily. And then at least that this recommendation that will kickstart will ensure that although that we have made a recommendation on the PRR, I think we're still gonna look at the PRR. And then let's keep that light burning on the Delco thing. Yeah, let's include that recommendation that that issue of Delco, that the revenue collected by Delco be resolved speedily. So are you moving for the adoption?
I move for adoption.
Thank you very much. And the report has been moved for adoption with amendments, and then we'll second it. Mayor Afuti, as far as the margin, and say so. Thank you. The move has been seconded. That takes us now to how many sets of minutes? So only 3 sets of minutes. Honorable members, you have seen the minutes. You have seen the minutes. Now don't collapse the model. No, if you move, then you'll collapse. Yes. And then the first set of minutes is the minutes of the 31st of January. 6th December. Why do you mean that? It's you. Maybe she fetched it from the water. 6th December, yes. 6th December, the meeting where we had the Auditor General on the audit outcomes of the Department of Home Affairs on the annual, and the briefing by the department itself, in the other way to look at the ages and bids, which we did not. Also, of course, on page 1, is there anything to worry about, Dr. Pickler?
Shepherd.
change, then go and double check. Because then there should be some recordings. And the people, and if it's in the meeting, he never finishes the meeting without speaking. If you can, if you can hear him speaking, that means he was present. If he never spoke, then that means he was somewhere else. But I know that there is a meeting where Pickles was not present.
Yes, he said that he said it.
And with Honorable was saying that there was a meeting where you were not speaking.
You see, that was an apology. Now, absent an apology, there is two different things.
No,
absent
fine.
Is very bad.
I think let's really just go and double check and correct you, inform us in the next week. Then on page 2, yeah. remember that there were two public hearings, one I was not there, one I was there. Oh, you dealt with it. Okay. On page one of this, is there anything to be said there? I said this one, the figure, you're part of us. You did not spectacularly absent yourself. Then on page two, also of course it didn't have the same problem of certain pages that cut, but what is up there is just a sentence talking to the people present. Page three. The only thing is that some of the paragraphs that we have written under each and every presenter, we included even certain sentences that that as far as I'm concerned, they are superfluous. But I think we'll manage that moving forward. We'll manage that as we move forward. And on page four, nothing. Then page five. And then on page six, seven, and then on page eight, the page eight is the continuation of the committee decision. Then we were expecting this talk for us. Please, from ISA, from the second, I hope that the second time would help us with that. Okay, I'm sure maybe I have seen, I'll be assisted to see. Then the sound clip from the Rwandan community, which we did not agree to listen to it during the meeting. Also expected that it will come through our cell phones. Okay, I can pursue him because we did not request it. He offered it. People can pursue it. Then the committee will consider roundtable discussions on the amendment. No. I think that this was a proposal. Consider the proposal. On the round table discussion. I think that's what they said. Okay. You see, I think that is what we have agreed to. Yes. Then other than that, I think what I was saying, honorable members, is that under these organizations that presented. In the minute, one would especially expect to have the challenges they are raising, what they are not agreeing to, and what they are proposing. But then, as we have all the noise that they are making, and then at the end of the day, then you have got a very lengthy document. And then you have seen single out what they are not supporting and what is what they are proposing based on it. Very short, court and border, Mr. Miller.
Absolutely.
Court and border.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay, anybody that would move for the adoption of these minutes? And that is it.
Okay, I will move for adoption.
So thank you very much. And then anyone who second? Mera Budi? I can't hear you. You don't have the document?
I second.
Okay, seconded, and then the minutes will be signed. And then let's look at the last set of minutes. The last set, 31 January. That's the meeting where we had a briefing from the department on the second, yeah, that's in relation to the report that we have just gone by. So we're almost going to go through two reports. Because the minutes are almost covering everything, like the report itself. On page one, issues related to attendance. Page two. Those are the things that we decided on. And the document.
page 3, I do not remember how we concluded the three issues. That is the second paragraph on page 3, which reads, the DG reported that the following three targets will not be met by 31st March 2017. The annual report was not tabled by the 31st by September 2016. The Border Management Authority BMA will not be launched by 17th April by 1 April 2017, and the EMC will not be piloted at one of the ports of entry. But I don't remember what exactly were the reasons and what were the plans, given that they could not meet the deadline. If perhaps we can remind each other.
Yeah, well, I think these were the reasons that were presented were matters beyond their power. Remember that the annual report, it was on the basis that there was a particular audit problem with the accounting principles that were moving from one pole to the other. And then the Border Management Authority then to have clearly said that no, now with Parliament, it's no longer within the department. And then there's very little they can do about it to ensure that they actually make sure that it is approved and implemented on the 1st of April. They did explain that. And I think one port of entry, I think, where they would not violate it, I think there was some sort of an explanation in terms of infrastructure related, but I'm not saying it with authority. But what is happening was that's why we did not discuss that much, because the reasons that were given were straightforward, that the things that are beyond their power actually to really move to make a progress on those things. They have had the target to ensure that border management is also by the 1st of April it is implemented, but now it is not, because it is no longer in the department, it is here in Parliament. They can't dictate on the speed of Parliament, and hence we had all the hiccups that were coming between the two ministers or ministers. Yes.
We'll just include a sentence in relation to what Ben Shepherdson said, that due to matters beyond their power, these targets are not met. We can just clarify.
Okay. I think that should be concluding this minute. Anybody to move for the adoption? Okay.
I'm for adoption.
Okay, is moving for the adoption of this set of minutes, and other people who say and Melder were not part of the meeting, but today they are here. There's nothing that stops them from seconding the move. There's nothing that stops them from seconding the move. Other people, Melder? Press the button,
Chairperson. I second the minute.
Okay, Honourable Melder has seconded the move. Thank you very much. And Honourable Members, I think this brings us to the end of this meeting. But I still want to indicate to you, Honourable Members, that there's a possibility that we can we'll arrange a special meeting, because we need to give you the PRR report at the BMA. And then I will send the message, I'll really request that we attend that special meeting. I don't know about the date now. I'm just going to inquire and see which date we can have. We need an extra day, if not two, to really dispose the PRR report and the BMA, because the Refugee Amendment Bill is going to keep us on our toes forever. And there's no way we can just speak in between our ordinary meetings. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.